This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right. Thanks for joining us as we continue. So last night, Draymond Green stepped on Domantas Sabonis, and all of a sudden everybody's like, well, oh well. But you know what? We're not really surprised by this. Draymond Green has done things in the past, especially in the postseason, that has raised the eyebrows of people around the sports world. It's almost like it's not springtime until Draymond Green is kicked out of a game for something. But the reality of it is he's been an integral part of the success of the Golden State Warriors. And as I was saying in hour number one, there's a talk about whether or not this core, this three-man core, can possibly stay together when their ownership group continues to spend money in the luxury tax, right, to keep them together. But if they lose this series, there might need to be a breakup of these three individuals and have one of them go their separate ways because they can't get the kind of money that they'll be looking for. But the Sacramento Kings are a really, really fun basketball team to watch. This series so far has been great. It's been absolutely great. Controversy or not, you're seeing the rise of a megastar in De'Aaron Fox. And again, you take a team, you know, that's now guided by Mike Brown to the playoffs after a very, very long drought, and you're the number three seed, and you score 120-plus points a game, and most of America can't watch you because you're on way too late. And let's be honest, you're in Sacramento. You're just not drawing the sort of national attention. When the NBA and executives sit around and the TV executives sit around to talk about which regular season games are going to be the ones that gravitate towards a general national audience, the Sacramento Kings, even if they're having a very good year, are just not going to be one of those teams. That's just the way we're going to take Golden State. We're going to take the Phoenix Suns with Kevin Durant. There's just too much familiarity with the other teams in this league, and you're not going to get to see a lot of Sacramento. And again, that was a late series start last night, and I think most of America woke up to the news of Draymond Green's making the big stomp. But the reality is that that's sort of where Sacramento is right now. And as we get, if they advance past this Golden State in this series, they'll make big enough news to warrant more and more eyeballs as the playoffs continue. And they're on at more reasonable times for everybody across the country. But that being said, what do you think the NBA will do with Draymond Green? Is this warranting a full suspension for Game 3 at the Chase Center on Thursday night? Now, my thought is that it is not. I think that the ejection is fine. It may not be a long ejection, given that it came at the midway point of the fourth quarter, meaning he didn't do it in the first, so he's out the entire game. But I also think that if I was the Kings, I honestly wouldn't want that. I know it's more difficult to beat Golden State at home when Draymond Green's playing, but I also know that the history, and Mike Brown knows this really well, of the team rallying around Draymond Green is pretty significant. Here's the one thing that I will say. Green knows exactly what he's doing. Right? That's the one thing about him, is that he's very intelligent, and he's plotting this out exactly the way he wants it to play out. So when he gets thrown out of the game, and he's looking at the crowd, and he's turning into this sort of like wrestling figure, right? Like, oh, come on, bring it. Yeah, all right, I hear you. Oh, yeah, yeah. Right? And they're raining booze down on him, and they're raining all the chants at him. He knows what he's doing, because if you saw the press conference after, or heard the press conference afterwards, he's very decisive. He's coming out and saying, hey, look, my leg was grabbed twice in this series, and the referees aren't calling it. And he laid out his case very well, enough that could make you go, But I also think that if you're Adam Silver and you took all your emotion out of it, meaning emotionally, I don't like the look of my NBA turning into a WWE circus, right? If you pulled yourself out of that, because Silver was in attendance, so you can almost understand if he's a little bit more agitated at this. And that could lead into the conversation about a suspension for game three. But if you heard Draymond Green's explanation of it, you might say, look, it does warrant a ejection and it does warrant a warning going into game three, meaning you've already got strike one against you. But I don't think it warrants a full game suspension because he made a case that, hey, listen, I'm trying to go one way. I'm trying to go up the court. And I got a guy on the ground that grabs my foot as I'm doing that. And oh, by the way, it also happened in game one. Malik Monk did the exact same thing. And he's making this case that that can't happen either. Right? You don't like where my foot landed? Because he's not going to admit he stomped, even though it really does show the kind of pressure and force in the video that sort of warrants it. But Sabonis is fine, right? Sabonis continued to play in the game. The x-rays were clear. He had a dunk with seven seconds remaining.
I mean, it looked like he's got to be stretchered off there for a little bit.
Right, exactly, right? So I think if you're Adam Silver, you got to pull some emotion out of this. I can't imagine any commissioner liking the look of what that was.
Right, do you have to also pull Draymond Green's name out of it, like the history of Draymond Green, and just take it for this one event?
Yeah, I think you do. Because
do you go and say, oh, it's Draymond being Draymond again?
Do I need to send
a stronger message?
You can say, I'm giving you, you know what, you have a warning here. So we're going into game three with you already in the strike one situation here. And you'll be ejected even on minor stuff if you're not careful. But I would also tell the officials, hey, do watch that foot grabbing thing. I know it's Draymond, he likes to run his mouth, but do be careful. Watch that, because it isn't appropriate. We don't want to lose a player, any player, to a snapped ankle because he was trying to run up the court, and as he's running, somebody's on the ground grabbing ankles and twisting ankles while they're down there. It just leads to that kind of retaliatory response. Now, again, I don't think Draymond Green should have stayed in the game. I don't think this is a nothing burger. I don't think any of that stuff. I think it was something. It was a stomp. I don't care what he says about I needed to put my foot down.
Come on.
Like you put your foot down hard on the man's chest. All right. Like there's no I was just trying to land softly.
You know, the only time you can use that excuse is when you're hanging on the rim too long.
Right, yeah.
That's where he goes like, well, I was hanging on the rim, so I didn't land on this guy.
Right.
That's why, you know, I hung on to it too long, and, you know, I got a foul for it. But, yeah, Draymond can't say, well, I was going to fall over if I didn't put my second foot down on the ground.
And, by the way, I would never admit this if I was a commissioner, but it does make this series a lot more fun. I mean,
yeah,
this series is a blast, but it's a lot more fun when Draymond's making the kind of noise that he makes.
All right, I got to say, I'm shocked with this series.
But Sacramento? Yeah.
Yeah, and I shouldn't be because we talked about this beforehand, how horrible the Warriors were on the road.
No, I'm with you. I am with you 100%. I thought they would split a game in Sacramento.
Yeah, I did not see a 2-0 lead, and where the Kings have kind of looked more in control than the Warriors have.
I agree completely. And Steph Curry is missing three-point shots. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had a box-in-one situation that kind of bogged them down in game one, right? Klay Thompson was missing some shots. Jordan Poole has been less effective than I thought
Who?
He was going to be, right?
Who? I don't think I've seen him play yet.
And you've got a great Sacramento team. Malik Monk is a strong sixth man coming out. I mean, it's a solid team, man. Solid team. And they're well coached. You would expect that. But, I mean, we've seen too many times these teams that play really well and they have good records, maybe not a 3 seed, but maybe like a 4 seed or whatever. But they're in the playoffs for the first time. And they don't play particularly well. They don't win. But they felt like it was just a continuation of what they were doing. And they didn't have the same sort of playoff jitters. Or if they did, they didn't quite show them in the first two games of this series. So I'm very impressed with Sacramento. Really impressed with Sacramento. Tonight, I don't know if I could stay up two nights in a row, but I'm going to try to stay up for Kings Clippers. That series was great.
You mean Suns Clippers?
Suns Clippers. What did I say? I'm sorry. I'm sorry
Kings.
About that.
Yeah, you're already moving on.
Suns Clippers. Yeah, I'm already moving on. The Suns Clippers tonight in Arizona. That to me has got that's as intriguing of a series as we got with the already. I mean that Kevin Durant not taking a shot in the final 6 minutes of that game was remarkable to me. You think he would have forced something in that sort of crunch time of that game. So I think the series that series has got a lot. Again, you're talking about a series tonight, Boston and Atlanta. I just don't see the Hawks making any noise in that series at all. Brooklyn's toast after last night's loss. And Brooklyn doesn't have anything. Brooklyn is nothing for the Sixers. Nothing. But these Western Conference games, these two series in the West, have got a lot on them. I mean, again, isn't it odd to see a series that goes 2-0 Sacramento, but knowing that we don't know anything until we get to San Francisco. When we get to San Francisco, that might be the spark for Golden State where they win two at home and then catch you sleeping in game five and then come back game six. Or they split, which is going to be dangerous because they got to force a game five win in Sacramento. I mean, there's a whole bunch of angles to game three, you know, in that series. Really important game coming up on Thursday night in that series. And then Memphis with Ja Morant's hurt wrist. And the Lakers playing as well as they are. The West has got great series. All right, we will continue with the good, the bad, and the dumb. Coming up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. It is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
Oh, it's the good, the bad, and the dumb. The Tuesday edition as we gear up for more and more playoff action in both the NHL, NBA, NFL draft next week. But it's not the good of the day. What's the good of the day?
The good of the day is my Los Angeles Dodgers.
Yes.
Signed a player that will not play for them in 2023.
Okay.
They've been doing this every year since 2018.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So they routinely will sign this player. He's an outfielder named Andrew Tolles, who was brought up through the Rays organization and then traded to the Dodgers around 2018. They keep signing him every single year because shortly after he joined the team, he was diagnosed with schizophrenia and other mental health issues.
Oh.
So in order for him to keep full benefits and get the treatment that he needs, they just keep signing him.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. How long are they going to do this until he's 50?
That I don't know. I don't know if there's an end date on it. And thankfully, I mean, they're signing him to like a minor league deal.
Guess you keep rolling along.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's good for him.
Hopefully there's a light at the end of the tunnel for Andrew Tolles. But
bright young prospect was he just a player to be named later?
No,
kind of
he was a bright young prospect. Came over in a trade. I don't have the trade details that he had with the Rays. But I think he was the main cog. He was taken in the third round by the Rays.
Oh, okay,
which that's pretty really good. That's pretty really good.
Yeah, it's really good. Good for the.
I know there's like 122 rounds of the MLB draft, but still, that's pretty good. Third round.
No, that's great. Good for him. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome. So, can't imagine that must be how tough that must be for him to have play, get drafted and whatnot, and then have this
slowly develop. It was schizophrenia and bipolar disorder.
Yeah, yeah. And there is treatment for that, so hopefully he can overcome that.
And get on the Dodgers and say, you know, that we'll help you through this.
Oh, that's very good. That's very good. All right, what is the bad of the day?
The bad of the day is that, you know, and it's kind of a lesson for everyone out there, that reporters have challenges when reporting the news.
Yes.
You know. So one of those that had difficulty was Brian Windhorst.
Oh, you've yes. Heard of him. Our very windy.
Windy. Anyways, he was giving a report, I believe this was yesterday, from Phoenix. He appeared on the TV show Get Up, which is an early morning show. And one of the hosts, one of the guys on Get Up, because he was coming live to him like teleconference or whatever it is, Zoom. I'm going to say Zoom because that's what it looks like to me. And
probably was in the hotel room.
Right, he was in the hotel room, but asking him why he was whispering.
I'm trying to figure out, why are you the only one whispering? Everyone else is answering questions and talking. You're whispering. Why are you whispering?
Well, we all have adverse situations, and apparently someone in the hotel room next to me was not a get-up viewer and not happy about the early wake-up call here in Phoenix. And let's just say that messages have been delivered not in a soft manner. So I'm trying to avoid having a wrap on any part of my body.
Did the hotel manager tell you to knock on your door and say, quiet down in there?
This individual did not contact the manager, but their point was made very strongly. So I'm trying to respect my neighbors here in Phoenix before 7 a.m. here.
Okay. Hold on. Hold on. First of all, I'm not – okay. I've not been in this exact situation where I've had to do get up or a major network TV show.
Right.
But I've done early morning radio hits on the road. You find another place in the hotel to do it.
Right.
All right.
Now I'm assuming.
I have been on the road where they're like, hey, man, you want to call the morning show and give an update on whatever team, Air Force, whatever team I was with? I've done these. You go into the lobby. You go see if there's a conference room you can go into, the empty conference rooms in the hotel. Mm-hmm. You talk to the manager and go, hey, I'm doing these radio hits for me. If you're him, you go, hey, listen, I just need to plug my computer in. I need a place where I can do this hit for ESPN. I guarantee you they'll tell you, yes, we'll find a place for you if you tell them you're doing something
especially
for ESPN.
Especially if you're Brian Windhorst.
And exactly.
This is what I can think of, right, because he's in Phoenix. The show Get Up is a 8 a.m. Eastern time start.
It is, yes, it's an 8 a.m.
So
Eastern
time. So it's about 5 a.m. in Phoenix. 5 a.m. in Phoenix during that, you know, when it's starting. He's probably coming on in the first hour as, you know, he's a big time reporter. He probably just rolled out in Phoenix and is still in his PJs and didn't want to make the extra effort.
That's right. Get dressed,
take the. You know, the suit and the jacket and tie on.
Yeah. Just throw something on, go downstairs, or arrange it with the manager. And they go, yeah, just come down here at 4:30 and this room will be available to you. I mean, there's always somebody up. There's always somebody here.
Well,
do it
and
there.
They're not using it at 4:30 in the
exactly.
morning.
Exactly. It's not like whatever convention is coming in to have a meeting.
Yeah, besides, right? if they were setting up for said convention, they're not setting it up at 5 in the morning.
No, they'll be more than happy to let you do it. Maybe grab a cup of coffee in the lobby or maybe breakfast, whatever, and then do your hit. But this happens a lot in other mediums. There's ways to do this. I wonder if that was not. I'm not saying it's fake. I think there was a little bit. But I think let's play it up a little more for TV.
Yeah.
Where somebody went, yeah. Brian, that's actually a pretty good story, man. We should probably do that. It's light. It's a fun show. Let's do it that way. Rather than you finding a conference room and do it like every other person has ever done it ever. You know? So, I understand his pain. Yeah, because I've been in hotel rooms having to record stuff and being like, nah, I'm going to wake somebody up. Man, it's too early. It's too early.
Yeah, because you can't go in there and be like, you know, like you still do Sports Flash and you were here in Houston doing Sports Flash. I mean, it was during the day when you're able to do it, but at night you'll have to do it. And you're not going to sit there and go, you know, in Memphis today. You're not going to be whispering a Sports Flash.
Exactly. I mean, you gotta be up and running. Real quick story. Dave Preston and I were covering a golf tournament and when we were at WGIR and we were calling in the results. And Dave was doing the early morning setup, so he would call in and be like, we're going, you know, here at Adirondack Country Club, wherever we were. And the producer said, Dave, you sound like you just woke up. And we had just woken up. So Dave ran around the hotel. He ran to get energy and then came back in a little winded, but had filled his lungs up with air so he could broadcast. And that's basically how we got through the early morning drudgery of waking up.
That's funny.
Yeah. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day is that Australia always takes it to the extreme. Wouldn't you agree, Tony?
I like Australia, but I do agree. They take it to the extreme.
So the Carrbrook Golf Course, which is in Queensland,
Yes.
Which I'm not 100% sure where Queensland is in Australia. I know it's one of its provinces. At this golf course and some of these water hazards, you would not be surprised to see at least 6 to 12 different bull sharks scattered throughout the water.
Oh, hello.
Yeah.
Wow. Bull sharks? Now, I don't know much about sharks. Is a bull shark like a dangerous, no. more dangerous shark? Is like,
well,
the hammerhead, he's cool, but this bull shark, he'll just eat you for no reason at all.
That's exactly what a bull shark is. I guess in bull sharks, they tend to find license plates.
Oh, I got you. Okay. You know,
tin cans, vegetation. I mean, they just find everything. And, you know, the problem with bull sharks is that they survive in brackish waters, meaning that they can survive in salt water and fresh water and a mixture. Their favorite place is a mixture of salt and fresh water. So these are the type of sharks that do swim up rivers.
Excellent.
And so in Australia, there's a river that kind of cuts through this golf course. And I guess if enough rain gets, it gets into some of the different water hazards that are scattered throughout this golf course. So, yeah, there's about a half dozen to a dozen bull sharks scattered throughout this golf course.
Let's just make something clear. Mother Nature does not play around, all right?
I know you. If you hit the ball in the water, that's its new home.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But would you feel comfortable taking a drop next to the water hazard? Are you going to penalize a stroke, I'm going to go from the middle of the fairway.
I wouldn't want to be near. Mentally, I would go, a bull shark's not going to come on land and drag me like a crocodile.
Course.
But being around them would freak me out a little bit.
See like a good like 6-foot shark.
Oh, yeah.
You know, one slip and I could be dead.
Doesn't SeaWorld have one of those tubes that you go into where the sharks are like
swimming above you?
Swimming above you and stuff. That's always kind of fun.
Yeah.
But they
don't put bull sharks in there though.
No, they don't put bull sharks in there. Bull sharks are like, it can swim in salt water, it can swim in regular water, it'll climb into your house, it'll jump into your car, it'll kick you out of the car, it'll eat you while you're at a fast food restaurant. Like, it just, evolution just designed it just to be able to eat you wherever you're at. Yeah, man, that's Friday. Australia. There's like 100,000 ways to die in Australia. They got plants that will kill you just by looking at them. All right, that's good, the bad, and the dumb as we continue on Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
I'm watching that video you sent me of the water hazards at the golf course that have bull sharks in them, and it is the freakiest thing.
You're 100% right. They're not going to jump up on land all of a sudden like, hey, come here, sir. I'm going to come eat you. But I don't know. You're just golfing next to a place where you look to your right and you see a dorsal fin where it shouldn't be.
I know. That's the freakiest thing about it, man. It's like, you see those fins pop up, and that movie Jaws just come. You just can't get it out of your head.
You know, you can tell the size of a shark, Chief.
Is it, Chief?
From dorsal to tail. That's how you tell. It's 18 footer.
Ben Herbie was a baseball player. Bit him from the bottom down. Yeah, I never put a life jacket on again, Chief. Oh God, what a scary, scary speech that was.
It really was. It
really was, man.
And you know what makes it scary? Because, I mean, I know you've seen it 1,000 times like I have, is when he said that's the Indianapolis and you look at Hooper, Richard Dreyfuss's face.
Yeah, right.
And
exactly.
It's just all of a sudden, it's like, because they're laughing about, you know, the scars that they have. And then all of a sudden his face goes, oh.
Ugh. Yeah, because they're all having fun. They're drinking.
Yeah.
They're like, Mary, she broke my heart. Ah! And then he tells the Indianapolis story and it all gets serious. As Quint retails, about all the guys that went in the water, banging away, sometimes shot go away, sometimes it doesn't go away. It's like, oh, God, petrified. Men screaming and hollering. The most frightened was he was getting into that lifeboat.
Yep.
Oh, it's
and it's true. I mean, that's what I love about it. It was delivered so perfectly because, if you're waiting your turn to get into the lifeboat or the the helicopter, the basket or whatever, whatever's getting you out of the water, that would be the biggest fear you have, is that I'm so close and I'm going to die.
I'm good. Yeah, I may not make it. I'm so
right
close.
Here.
I can see being rescued, and I may not make it. Exactly. Yeah. Bullshit.
But yeah, but
man.
Golf course. I mean, just no big deal.
Yeah.
I'm sure, they all have names too.
I was on a family vacation once in Mississippi. We went down to Gulfport, Mississippi, and my niece was there. We were at the kids, and we're all on the beach hanging out, and we were in the water, and The water wasn't great. It was all right. It was a couple of years after the BP oil spill, so you still had a little bit of it's not so great, but it wasn't that bad. So my niece, she's on the beach, and she goes, "Shark!" And she points out to the thing, and I look out and I don't see anything, and I go, "Listen, don't yell shark on the beach like this."
It's kind of
a fin pops up out of the water. Now I don't know if it's a dolphin. I don't know. I didn't care at that point. I'm like, everybody out of the water. Like, we're going to go swim at the pool at the condo. That's where we're going to be from now on. It was this, when you see the fin, I don't even know. Like, I'm not smart enough to tell, like, a dolphin fin to a shark fin. I just see fin, and I go, that's enough. I'm done. I'm out. Well, that's it. I don't care what it is. Porpoise. I don't care. Dolphins are murderers anyway. They'll kill you, too, if they can. Don't get me out of here.
Even if you were able to tell, are you really wanting to stick around and find out?
No, I have no idea.
That's the other thing.
Exactly. That's when that vacation, I almost drowned because there was a buoy out out in the ocean, and my brother swam out to the buoy and back. And I decided I wanted to swim out to the buoy and back, but I wasn't as physically fit. And I swam out to the buoy, and as I was swimming back, I was getting tired, and I went to go put my foot down, and there was nothing to put the foot down in, and I realized I was really far away from where I needed to go. So I was like, uh-oh, I'm exhausted and I'm swimming, and I really thought they're not gonna be able to come get me, like, if I'm in real trouble. I was really, my heart started pounding. I was like really nervous. I'm like, these are the stories you hear a lot, right? Where it was like, I was just swimming, and the next thing you know, that was it. So I ended up getting back, and luckily I was like, oh, I'm never doing that again. I didn't realize how I was a pretty good swimmer as a kid, but as you get older and you don't swim very often, like you don't really swim very often, I was like, uh-oh, I don't have it. I do not have it. I was all like, I got to get back in shape. But sharks are scary, man. Mother Nature is scary. We was talking about Australia. They have plants that will, like, if you touch this plant, it'll send poisons through you that will just kill you.
I think
just
they had
make your body turn into jello.
I want to say, I think they have like the 10 deadliest animals.
Yeah.
On the planet.
Exactly.
They all reside in Australia. Like, the number one thing is that blue octopus or.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Whatever. They can only be found there. And it's so colorful and beautiful. But if you touch it, you're dead in like seconds. I don't know.
Yeah, pretty much everything in Australia will kill you, as this said in this article. It's like pretty much everything, it will kill you in Australia. It's so true. It's like there have been descriptions of explorers. There's this one plant that if you touch it, it'll basically turn you into liquid. It's like you can't stop going to the bathroom. That's it. You're done. It's this crazy kind of, I always want to go to Australia, though. I've been wanting to go to Australia.
I do, too. You and I have talked about it. The only thing prohibiting that or stopping us from doing that is 18 hours.
Yeah, exactly. It's too long. It's too long. It's too long. It's the traveling that I really would love to do, I need a light-speed Millennium Falcon. That's what I need. I don't want to be on a jet to different places in the globe that I've wanted to go to. So like, I think I've told you this story. I had a friend of mine, Brian Gomez, who worked for the Colorado Springs Gazette. And I was doing radio then. And it was like the Summer Olympics happened in Beijing. And he came in after the Olympics. He was like, come in for an hour. Like, we'll do a whole hour on the Olympics and your experience in Beijing, covering the games or whatever. And he's like, okay, great. So he came in. So I just said right off the bat, I go, do me a favor. Take us through the moment you woke up in your apartment to you getting to the hotel in Beijing. Tell us the entire journey from that point on. It was like around the world in 80 days. It was like, well, I got up and I went to the airport, then I took a hot air balloon, and then I took a steamer across the Pacific, and then I had to take a raft upriver. Like, it was nonstop traveling for close to 2 days to get there. He had to go from, like, Colorado Springs to Denver, then Denver to, like, San Francisco. Then he had to wait, like, 7 hours. Then he had to fly to Tokyo. Then when he was in Tokyo, he had to wait for, like, 6 hours for a flight to Shanghai. And then from Shanghai, he had to go to Beijing. It was, like, forever to get there. And I remember looking up flights to different places, and it's like, yeah, the flight may take, like you were saying, 18 hours. It's, like, 36 hours from door to door. It's like, wow. That's crazy. Can we teleport me there? Because that's what I want to know. We were, I was telling you about Phil Mickelson last week about the Masters, when I was saying that Mickelson had played this incredible round at Augusta, but they all have to go to Adelaide, Australia for a live tour event. That's a long way to go for three rounds of golf and some millions of dollars in prize money. But that's where they have to, that's where they're going. They're going there, then they're going to Singapore. They're taking this live thing around the world.
Yeah.
Like for all of these guys that wanted easier lives and easier schedules, nah, that's not how this works. At least on the PGA Tour, you go overseas if you want to go overseas, but the tours are all really in the United States. Liv is like, hey, thanks for signing that contract. So we're going to be going to Indonesia. We're going to be going to Jeddah in Saudi Arabia. You'll be playing in Singapore. We'll also be playing in London. We'll be like all of these places around the globe. And it's like, oh, you know, I was so excited to be part of Live to be closer to my family. Closer to your family, you're constantly in a suitcase. Like, you're making a couple of weeks off, but you're jumping on planes constantly traveling the globe.
But they're flying in a plane that has, like, a full dance floor and bar.
Those are done. That's done. They took that away.
Why did they take that away?
They did.
Did I miss something?
Yeah, they did. They cut out all of those expenses. They said, nah, that was too much. So they cut down all those expenses. So you are flying private, but you're not flying on the party bus anymore.
Still got the pods, right?
Yeah. They still got that.
The beds and
yeah, they still travel in a very nice way, but yeah, the party bus that got cut this year. They went a little too much over the budget last season, but it's still a long, even if you fly private, that's an incredibly long flight. I mean, to go on, it's the Australian Open.
Yeah, I was like just looking at it right here from flights to Australia to Sydney, where there's one stop. It's 19 hours, 5 minutes.
I don't like being on a plane for 4 hours.
Yeah.
I can't imagine being on it for 19, especially if I've got to go
hours.
Especially if I go the way I go, which is trying to find the cheapest flight possible, which means I'm stuck next to, three people that I don't want to be around, and I'm not getting the full row to myself, and all I'm getting is peanuts and maybe a cup of Diet Coke.
They better have meals.
Yeah, exactly. Are you kidding me? I better be eating something on those flights. You kidding? Stuck in that tube forever.
I mean, here's another one. So 17 hours. I mean, like, it matters.
17 hours on a plane?
I mean, that's probably the fastest, right? 17 hours is the average flight time from Houston to Sydney.
If I was waiting to catch a flight 17 hours, I'd almost be in tears, man. I'd be like, ugh.
I don't know if I could do it.
How many movies could you watch on a flight? How many TV shows could you watch on a flight? How many books
I would need to
can you read before you just get restless and go, like, I can't. I got it. Please land. I got to do something. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. So, Jalen Hurts got rich yesterday. We broke that news for you. It was coming down the line, $255 million, 5 years. And the winners and the losers for both of these are, it's pretty, you know, there's a lot, right? The winners are obviously going to be Jalen Hurts, right? Because he got generationally wealthy. His agent, because she did a masterful job actually showing the importance of actually having an agent. It's one of the things we talked about with Lamar Jackson. I know that some people like to do it their own way and they like to negotiate on their own and maybe keep more of the money themselves because you got to pay the agent a portion of your salary. But the reality of it is that you need somebody that will vouch for you in a way that you can't vouch for yourself. Like, you need somebody that plays, that can play in the muck, if you will, and doesn't have a problem with sticking up for you when negotiations can get a little dicey. Now, it sounded to me like this has been an easy process, right? It was just basically numbers. Lamar Jackson is not in that same situation because he wanted a fully guaranteed deal, and the Ravens don't want to give a fully guaranteed deal. So it can almost get, like, personal because you're fighting for a cause that your other side is not going to agree with. So it's not just a matter of getting money. If it was just Lamar Jackson trying to get the best deal he possibly could, then he could probably negotiate for himself. But he was trying to be the second person. I guess I shouldn't say was. He still is, technically, until a new deal is done, trying to be the second person to really get the kind of Deshaun Watson money, because Deshaun wants first. Kirk Cousins got a guaranteed deal, but I think when people look at it, it's more like what Deshaun Watson got is more of what he's looking for. But you would need an agent to sort of, you know, pave that road for you and have a discussion about you in a way you might not be comfortable doing yourself. But she did a masterful job because she not only made him the highest paid player in the game as of right now, she also got a no trade clause from the Eagles. Now, a no trade clause is great because what it does is, as long as he has the ability to play in the NFL, he doesn't have to start, but it means the Eagles in the next 5 years can't just ship him away and let him be somebody else's problem, right? Like if he struggles a bit, if he's physically able to play football, they can't trade him, right? Without his approval. So it's something teams don't like to have because they know that today's quarterback is tomorrow's backup. And so down the road, there's be somebody else coming along the line. But as long as he's healthy, the Eagles are on the hook for $51 million a year to him. And the no trade clause almost makes it like he's going to, if he stays healthy for 5 years, he'll get all of $255 million. But where, and who else does it benefit? Well, it benefits Justin Herbert. It benefits Joe Burrow. It benefits those guys because they're up for contracts. And when they get their contracts, what is that going to look like? Is the number going to be $55 million? Is the number going to be $60 million? I don't know if it's going to get that high that quickly, but it, you know, 55 is a threshold to watch out for. But it also really hurts Lamar Jackson. He doesn't have any leverage now. He is zilch when it comes to getting a fully guaranteed deal. He's never taken the Ravens to a Super Bowl like Jalen Hurts did. He was an MVP, so at least he has that in terms of similarity. But the Ravens now can sit back. Steve Bisciotti won this one because he now looked at what the Eagles did, and he goes, well, that's about what I'll do for my quarterback. As long as the money isn't fully guaranteed, I will work out a really nice deal for Lamar Jackson. But it is not going to be 230 guaranteed like Deshaun Watson's deal. It's not going to be that way. And Jalen Hurts, to be honest with you, I mean, again, I'm always careful with this because I'm not a guy that likes to go down the road of people being satisfied with what they get because I would be satisfied with what they get, right? I wouldn't want to tell an athlete, you should be happy with $20 million a year because I would be happy with $20 million a year. That's not the world that I exist in. And it, let's all be honest, as you get up in your careers, as you've grown from a 20-something-year-old kid that's just starting out in whatever industry you've chosen, and you got paid X amount of dollars, no matter how much you get paid, you always feel like you're worth more. It doesn't matter what the zeros are at the end. If you're in an environment where you're seeing other people, there's a natural competitiveness to sitting and seeing, well, this person gets this amount, or I know that somebody's salary is this, or I know they're paying this in another company. You can be happy with what you make. You can be happy that all your bills are paid and you've got a nice house and a nice car and you've got a good retirement plan and all of those things. But we're all not immune to whatever our industry is paying in other ways, not being happy with what we're being paid, right? It's the same thing in sports. Yeah, $20 million a year is a lot of money. A lot of money, right? It's a lot of money. It's more money than most of us will ever see in a lifetime. But the reality of it is if you're a starting quarterback in the NFL, it's nothing. It's not even close. If you're a legitimate starting quarterback in the National Football League, not a placeholder, but a legitimate, you're our guy for the next couple of years, $20 million is nothing, right? So in that world, you'd want as much as you possibly can. Deshaun Watson's deal set in motion a thought process in Lamar Jackson that is not a feeling of, I'm disrespected if you don't pay me as much as Lamar as Deshaun Watson. I think he was legitimately going for a level of trying to break through something. I think it was, look, $179 million fully guaranteed on the Jalen Hurts deal is fantastic. I mean, it's fantastic, right? And he might get all of the $255 if he plays 5 years. He might get all of it. Deshaun Watson, his deal set in motion, right, this $230 fully guaranteed, an idea in Lamar Jackson's head that was obtainable to me. But it wasn't just obtainable to me. It would now be obtainable to everybody else. It is a complex that can infiltrate your head when you feel like you're doing it for something larger than yourself, right? You are trying to pave the way into something that may be the norm. And instead of it being traced back to Deshaun Watson, who got the benefit of a crazy owner who was trying to outbid other people that weren't on that same level of bidding, he becomes the one that negotiated that deal when the odds were against him. And if he did land it, what it would mean for the future of the position. But Jalen Hurts that's a signal that it's never going to go that way for him. Because the celebratory nature of this deal that happened within 24 hours has been rather remarkable. I mean, look at the way that deal has been presented, right? In 24 hours, look at the way that deal has been presented to the public by both sides, right? It's not only makes him the highest paid player in the NFL. He gets a no trade clause contract out of it. He gets $179+ million of it guaranteed, right? It's a 5-year extension after he took a team to the Super Bowl. And remember, they don't pay you for what you did. You pay for what they're going to do. It was negotiated and finalized by a female agent, a black female agent, who we don't see in the business. And what a remarkable job she did in getting this. It has been Howie Roseman has been praised for everything that he's been able to negotiate.
And that's what I said, too, about Nicole Lynn. She's going to be sought after.
Right. So it has been entirely praised on both as a win-win for both sides. Right. Howie Roseman has been able to move pieces around to not only afford this, but to find his quarterback when at the time they drafted him, Carson Wentz was the guy. And yet they were able to go, you know what? Carson Wentz isn't the guy. And you know what? Well, let's get rid of Carson Wentz and we'll use the capital we get for this and this, build pieces, and boom, we've got a quarterback and now we're in the Super Bowl. All of it's been praised. What's Lamar Jackson? Has Lamar Jackson, does he have anybody pushing behind him going, keep fighting the good fight, man. Keep fighting the good fight. Where is it? If there is, where is it? Because it seems like Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert are not going to join him in that pursuit. I think that when both of those deals come down, whenever those deals are done, that both of those guys will have similar but probably higher deals than what Jalen Hurts had. Right? Maybe $52 million a year, maybe $53 million a year, but in the same sort of category. 5 years, 270 with 190 guaranteed. Something along those lines, right? Something familiar, comparable, maybe just a little bit more. But nobody seems to be joining him in Lamar Jackson in his pursuit to get fully guaranteed money. And to me, I don't think in the end it was worth the headache he's getting. I just don't. It just doesn't seem to be a groundswell of backing support from people within the union. All right, hour three coming up as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.